basketball appointment show starts now. This is Bucks Weekly, your weekly checkup of your Milwaukee Bucks and all around the rest of the NBA. And now here's your host, Justin Garcia.
It is Bucks Weekly, as we are here to recap another perfect week for the Bucks in another week where the Eastern Conference Player of the Week comes from your Milwaukee Bucks. This time, Giannis once again for the second consecutive week. And this team, all of a sudden, just looking at this a couple of minutes ago, the offensive numbers starting to rise. Now, if we look at the offensive rating, still leaving some room for improvement as the Bucks will enter play tonight, I should say, with the 23rd offensive rating. So only very, very marginal gains there, but they are second in defensive rating and just on the heels now of the Cleveland Cavaliers for the best defensive rating in basketball. And perhaps more importantly, because this is the thing to monitor, net rating. You very, very seldom go very far if your net rating is outside of the top 10 and really beyond that. But the Bucks back up to sixth in net rating. There was quite a long stretch here where the net rating was basically around one. Not very good. But right now, a 2.7 net rating, a far cry from what we've seen in seasons past. But they're making some growth, and it is the sixth best net rating in basketball. You look back at January 23rd onward when Chris Middleton made his return, they're one of the few teams that are in the top 10 in each of those categories. Offense, defense, and overall net rating. And look, we've talked about this before. I know people will point to, yeah, but. You know, I know they beat the Clippers. But since January 3rd, the Bucks haven't really been playing the most difficult schedule in the world. Haven't had a whole lot of world beaters on that schedule. I would counter with this. We've seen them play in a similar schedule where the numbers weren't great. You know, obviously, we remember the 9-0 starts, but other stretches of this season, you played teams that weren't very good for extended periods of time, and you were just okay. So it goes a long way to show you how much you need to be full strength, and you just need to have your stars. So since Chris Middleton returned, 10th best offense, 3rd best defense, best net rating in basketball. That is your Milwaukee Bucks now that they're healthy. And again, last night was exactly what you wanted to see. It was a dominant win. It was a rare wire-to-wire win for the Bucks, and there was two stretches that stood out to me the most. In the third quarter, the Blazers knocked that margin down to 8. And for most of the first half, it was around a 10 to 15 point lead for the Bucks. Early in the third, the margin dropped to 8. The Bucks immediately went on a run and pushed it back up to 14. So you were up by 10 at halftime. It got up to 16. Blazers sliced it in half. You push it back to 14. They went on another run, knocked it down to 10, and the Bucks again extended the lead. Before you knew it, it was in the 20s. After it hit 20, never got lower than 17. The exact type of performance you need to see from this team as they are healthy or getting very, very close to healthy. So still waiting on Bobby Portis to make his return to the floor, but that's where the Bucks are. The type of win you exactly needed, and the other thing that's kind of becoming clockwork with this team is we had that stretch in January where they were just knocking down every three-pointer in sight, a 10-game stretch where they hit 190 threes. Only the fourth time in NBA history that's happened. They're only the third team to do it. But in that stretch, you were shooting at a very, very high volume, very high percentage, I should say. For the month of January as a whole, you still averaged just over 17 threes and shot better than your season average at around 36%. But the last couple of games, we've seen the Bucks kind of get off to these slow starts and not hit those shots, getting off to a 5 of 17 type of performances here. You saw the same thing yesterday. But the staple that we've seen for the Bucks is as the game progresses, this team's shooting gets better and better. 3 of 11 in the first quarter, 4 of 14 in the second. 7 of 27, certainly not good, but 5 of 8 on threes in the third quarter, 4 of 9 in the fourth. They're becoming a second-half shooting team as well, and that's the other thing to keep an eye on. Not just the net rating and not just how is the defense performing. We're getting close to that time where you got to start to pay attention to clutch situations and how are teams performing in the second half of games when these are close games, and especially not so much last night, but especially games like that victory against the Clippers. When you're playing good teams, when it is a clutch game, how are you playing down the stretch? And again, that's another number we're seeing rapidly improve for the Bucks. Still got to get to our sub of the week, preview our marquee matchup. And, you know, the marquee matchup of the week, we're going to add a caveat. And it hinges on what happens roughly 4 hours from now. I'll explain what I mean a little bit later on the program. But up next, we hand things over to Gail Klappa as we go courtside with the Milwaukee Bucks. This week, Gail Klappa's guest is our beat writer from The Athletic, Eric Name. You'll hear that conversation after this on Bucks Weekly.
The names you know.
We're joined by one of the key players on the Bucks roster, Bucks forward Pat Connaughton. He's a player that Wisconsin fans know well. Wesley Matthews, a majority owner and the current governor of the team, Mark Lazzari.
Talking about your favorite basketball team from on the court to off.
You never know. You might not have that many years left, so the hunger is for sure still there.
But I mean this. I think the fans in Milwaukee honestly recruited Bobby Portis more than anybody. I mean, he loves the fans in Milwaukee.
It's time to go courtside with the Milwaukee Bucks. Here's your host, Gail Klappa.
Hello, everyone. I'm Gail Klappa, and this is Courtside with the Milwaukee Bucks. Turn up the intensity, turn on the wins. The Bucks have reeled off 8 straight victories, their latest triumph coming on the hardwood in Portland Monday night. Now the Bucks are California dreaming. Up next, the Lakers and the Clippers in L.A. But this week could well bring some fireworks off the court. The NBA trade deadline looms large. And if history is any guide, GM John Horst will try to make a move. Tonight, we'll get the lowdown from a guy who has one of the best jobs on the planet. He gets paid to cover the Bucks every day, every game for The Athletic, a well-respected news source that is wall-to-wall sports. And a special bonus, Eric Name grew up in Wisconsin, so he knows the landscape like few others. Eric, welcome to Courtside. Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, Eric, delighted to be with you, and let's dive right in. You know, after missing much of the season with injury, the return of longtime Buck star Chris Middleton seems to have really given this team a spark, even if he's playing limited minutes for now. Tell us what you're seeing, Eric.
Yeah, it's interesting to see Chris only play about, you know, 20, 25 minutes a night. That number keeps creeping up further and further. And it's honestly, it's fun thinking about Mike Budenholzer as the head coach because, you know, he learned and made his way up in the league under Greg Popovich, who's, you know, as you think through Pop, he had one of the all-time 6 men, right? He had Manu Ginobili on those championship teams. And obviously they're going to get to a point where Chris Middleton will be back to his normal 30, 35 minutes a night. But for now, he is bringing kind of that Ginobili punch off the bench where every single night it feels like 20 points in 20 minutes. He adds in a couple assists, and it really has been big for this team just to have him back on the floor. And Chris just has such a spectacular chemistry with Giannis. Obviously, they spent almost their entire careers together. Chris just had that 1 year in Detroit before he came to Milwaukee. So they just know each other so well. You know, there's a play the other night where, you know, Giannis just kind of gives him a look, and he throws an alley-oop, and there's a big dunk for Giannis. And in my head, I was thinking, that's the only person on the entire planet that could have thrown that pass at that time, knew when to do it, how to throw it, and have that connection with Giannis. And I think that's one of the big things that we've seen is that, you know, Chris is just so essential to this team and everything that they do, and he can make things so much easier for Giannis and for Drew. And that's why you have, you know, the team built in the way that John Horst built it with that big three up at the top.
And Eric, Chris seems to be physically fit again. We don't see any rust on him at this point, do you?
No, it's really been nice to see it. The first time Chris tried to come back this year in those seven games, it just never really felt like he was quite right. You know, just his moves looked a little bit off. His jumper wasn't quite there. And he's come back here in these eight games, and he's just been really, really good. And it looks a lot like the guy that we used to see, the guy that could get a mid-range jumper up over anybody, the guy that can play in the pick and roll with Giannis and with Brook Lopez. And it, to me, it really does look like we're seeing him be himself. And obviously, as you mentioned, Gil, like, they haven't ramped him all the way back up to 30, 35 minutes, but in the limited doses that they've been using him for thus far, he very much looks just like himself.
Amen. Eric, an amazing stat. The Bucks have played only one game, only one this season, where they've had their full roster available. And now Bobby Portis, who arguably was in the running for Sixth Man of the Year, is sidelined. What do you hear, Eric, about the timing of Bobby's return?
Yeah, it's been interesting to watch. Bobby, you know, when we initially reported out the injury over at The Athletic, we were trying to figure it all out. And the pushback that we kept hearing when we were trying to report out a timeline was Bobby doesn't think it's going to take that long. He just doesn't think it. No matter what the injury is, Bobby never thinks it's going to take that long because he's so tough and he's so willing to push through pain and through that rehab. And he's going to attack it in really the way that so many guys on this roster already do. That, you know, that was kind of the tough part. I do think this is a situation where the Bucks as an organization are incredibly cautious. They're an organization that tries to get guys to, you know, really make sure that their bodies are right before they come back. And you're seeing that a little bit with Chris Middleton now and how slowly they're bringing him back. And to me, you look at the Bucks' schedule. You have these two games in L.A., Thursday and Friday of this week on the 9th and 10th of February. You have a Tuesday, February 14th matchup against the Boston Celtics that everyone is circling. And then their last game before the All-Star break against the Chicago Bulls on February 16th. And with that being just over a week away, I think you're going to certainly see Portis be out until the break. But, you know, in Portland, I was watching him pregame getting shots up. I was watching him at shoot-around try to get some work in. He's a lot closer than, you know, I think maybe people would have thought with a grade 2 MCL sprain. Typically that's 4 to 6 weeks. Sometimes it can be even 6 to 8 weeks. And I do think when you see the Bucks come back from the All-Star break on February 24th, I do think you're going to see Bobby Portis start to be in that mix. I don't know if he'll be right back as soon as it is on February 24th. That would be about a month out from when the injury occurred on January 23rd. But I do think he will be starting to ramp up and getting himself ready to get back on the floor.
Very interesting. And Eric, tell our listeners about the change for the better in the Bucks half-court offense. You know that one of Coach Bud's goals this season was to play quicker with faster ball movement against set defenses. And in the last few games with his win streak, you seem to see that emphasis paying off. Your thoughts?
To me, it's a couple of things. You have Chris Middleton coming back, and then really the emergence of Joe Ingles since he returned near the start of this the start of 2023. Those two, I think, have been transformational in the quality of shots that the Bucks get, the ball movement that the Bucks play with, and just the general crispness of what they're doing offensively. You know, so often with Giannis, he's so strong and he's so unbelievable and he's so unstoppable and such a force that he will go and do it himself. And we've seen him do it many times this season, 350-point games, and he's just unbelievable in that way, but it can become a little bit robotic. The offense can become mechanical where it's Giannis doing it and you spray the shooters around him and hope that, you know, he can get them involved as well. And with Joe and with Chris, you're seeing guys that can create for themselves, that can create for teammates. And And to me, that's been the biggest difference for this Bucks offense, especially in the half court. And, you know, Brooke and Joe and Chris and Drew all joke about the fact that they're not slow. They're methodical, methodical players. And they are big believers in making sure that, hey, you know, we're not slow. Maybe we're a little bit older, but that methodical nature has led to some really great shots. And because they're able to slow the game down, they can manipulate defenses and move defenders around the floor and really create great shots for this team.
But Joe told us when we had him on the show a couple of weeks ago that he was slow, white, and old, but he could still play in the NBA. And we'll have more with Eric Name in a moment. This is Courtside with the Milwaukee Bucks on WTMJ.
Now back to Gale Klappa.
Gale Klappa back again with Eric Name. Eric, Brook Lopez was lighting it up in Portland Monday night. Floaters in the paint, three-pointers from, you know, somewhere deep in Oregon. He's now reached 15,000 points scored in his career. Eric, I wonder, Brook is so good defensively. Do opposing teams underestimate his ability to score at all three levels?
Man, Brook Lopez has really had a fascinating career. He is what was maybe the most dangerous post player in the league for years and years and years with the Brooklyn Nets. And there would have never been a time where anyone would have underestimated his offense. You know, when the Bucks first got him in Mike Boonholder's first year, they were able to send him to a very cheap deal. He had just played for the Lakers. And there was this idea that he was a defensive liability, that not only was he not good defensively, he was someone that you might not even be able to play defensively. And to watch him really commit to that end, I think has led to nights where teams are going to be more concerned about what he's doing on defense. They're going to be thinking about all the shot blocking he does at the rim, how well he keeps other teams out of the paint, how hard he makes it for them in the paint. That is pretty far. His offense is pretty far down the list of things that he does and the Bucks do, and that just leads to the spot where, you know, Brook is always going to have, you know, maybe the fourth or fifth best defender. He's going to have a big man on him, and that big man is probably, like Brook does on the other end, want to stay near the rim. And all of a sudden, like you said, you know, you see Brook Lopez firing up three-pointers from 30 feet out. He's shooting 36.9% on almost five threes per game this season. He's just an unbelievable shooter, and he's committed to that. But then also you see nights like he had in Portland where all of a sudden he just flips the switch back on and reminds everyone, oh, yeah, remember I used to just hang out here down on the block and score on everyone all the time. And he can still do that. And it's a credit to Mike Budenholzer that over the years, in that first year, they were really focused on Brook just shooting threes, spacing the floor, and then as they've kind of turned into an even larger title contender, they were great in that first year under Bud, but they've really kind of formed into this machine offensively. They've started to use Brook more in the paint, use his post moves, use him as someone that when teams decide to play a 6'8 forward on him and try to make him run around the floor on defense, on offense, they give the ball to Brook and make that 6'8 forward try to cover him. And this is a 7-foot, 280-pound man. He's agile, and, you know, as we mentioned before, he's methodical, and he finds his way to the rim, and he gets there. And, yeah, I mean, it's crazy to think that he's gone from a defensive liability to a defensive player of the year candidate, and then at the same time, one of the most feared offensive players in the league, to an afterthought. And it's so interesting to just kind of watch what his career has been. And, you know, last night after he scored 15,000 points in the NBA, one of 148 players in the history of the league to ever do that, he reminded us, I'm not done yet. You know, I'm not interested in really celebrating this because I want to get to 20,000 yet. And we'll see if he can do that. Giannis said he's going to do it. And obviously, he's had the back issue last year, and with good health, maybe that ends up being a possibility.
And Eric, Brook told us last week that after his back surgery and coming back now this season, he has not felt this good in years. So he's got a fountain of youth in front of him to get to those 20,000 points.
Yeah, it is kind of impressive to think, you know, you see a 7 foot, 280-pound man get back surgery in, I guess these are just the marvels of modern medicine. In my brain, I'm thinking, oh, these are the last gasps of the career. This is right. going to be a problem for years going forward. And that hasn't been the case. It really has. You know, he's mentioned the fact that he can work out a little bit harder now. There was times in the past with his back struggles where, you know, they had to figure out the ways to get him through a season. They had to figure out, you know, how to lengthen out the time that he could play. It was a struggle. And now, as you mentioned, he's told us in the media as well, in the various media scrums and stuff, that, you know, this is the best that he's felt. And it is just, to me, crazy to think that at that age, 15 years into the NBA, into this career, he can feel that way. And that is just a marvel of modern medicine.
And you're right, Eric. After 15 years in the NBA, you and I'd be in the orthopedic ward. But speaking of, you know, players who are really coming into their own after many years of being overlooked, Jrue Holiday, will be playing in the upcoming NBA All-Star Game. Eric, your thoughts on why his talents have finally been recognized this year by coaches around the league?
Man, it's fascinating to think about his career because, you know, he's a part of some Sixers teams that are good, and then when they ultimately decided to trade him after he made an All-Star game in 2013, that was the start of what became the process in Philadelphia of the Philadelphia stacking up as many first-round picks as possible, as many top picks as possible, as many lottery picks as possible to try to build a great new team and find, you know, those types of talented players. And, well, they have that guy. They have that guy in Jrue Holiday and have that All-Star game in 2013. And I just think he's someone that, because he cares so much on the defensive end, and he's so physical and he's so strong, I think every opposing guard in the league knows how hard it is to go against him. They feel it. They get done with a night against Jrue Holiday, and they feel it. They're going to need some extra ice. They're probably going to need to study some more film to figure out some better moves. Like, they're going to be down the dumps after that. That I think Jrue gained the respect of players very quickly. And then if you're a coach, I think when the players tell their coach, like, hey, we can't run this set because Jrue Holiday is going to blow the play up, or I can't get past him in this way, maybe we should run this, or I'm not going to be able to score one-on-one against him, let's try to do something different, then I think it gets to the coaches. And I think one of the interesting things about covering this team as they traded for Jrue Holiday and as they've been one of the best teams in the league is night in, night out, when you ask about Jrue Holiday, the coaches say, this is a guy that's really underrated. The numbers might not show it, but he is a truly special player. And I remember joking around with some of my media colleagues, well, if that's the case, just vote him into the All-Star game. That's all you have to do, yeah. Right? Like, you have a vote for reserves every single year. If you truly feel that way, all you have to do is vote him in as reserve. And, you know, maybe they didn't feel this strongly 2 years ago or last year, but this year it finally came through. And I don't know, I guess that's kind of putting your money where your mouth is, but they've always said this is a guy that's underrated, that doesn't get enough attention. And they did the one thing in their power, the Eastern Conference coaches, to truly show that this guy is now maybe properly rated. And I'm curious to see. He's got some more years left on this contract. He's going to be, as he always likes to say, a Milwaukee Buck for life. I'm curious to see if this means a couple more All-Star games after this one here in 2023.
Well, as you know, Eric, we're biased in Milwaukee, but we sure think he's deserving. And we'll have more with Eric Name right after this. It's Courtside with the Milwaukee Bucks on WTMJ.
This is Courtside with the Milwaukee Bucks on WTMJ. Here's more with Gail Klappa.
Gail Klappa here with Eric Name. Well, Eric, let's switch gears a bit. as you know so well, there are defining moments in a long NBA season, really seminal moments that mark important turning points for a team. And I think we saw one of those moments late in the Bucks game against the Clippers last week. A minute 47 seconds long, the Bucks up by the slimmest one-point margin. Take it from there.
From there, I mean, it was just a defensive masterclass from Jrue Holiday and Wesley Matthews. And those two guys are really fun to me because last year during the playoffs, as they were going up against the Boston Celtics, it was Wes in the starting lineup and it was Jrue, and they were doing all that they could do to slow down Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. And I remember a shoot around in Boston. I actually talked to them about, you know, what it meant to play with each other. And Jrue Holiday joked that people sometimes confuse them on the road, that when they walk into the team hotel, autograph seekers will say, Jrue, can you sign this autograph? And it'll actually be Wes. And Wes will have the same thing happen to him. And I just thought it was so perfect and so interesting because they're so similar on the floor. They care so much on the defensive end. Their calling card is switching defensive assignments. They love doing that. And it was such a fun thing to realize. And then you talk to both of them more and you figure out that years ago that they thought that they were going to play together on the Dallas Mavericks when Wesley Matthews was down there with the Mavericks. And they tried to hatch up a scheme to actually get Holiday there before he re-signed with the New Orleans Pelicans. And so you can kind of see this bond, and then you watch them out on the floor, and you get exactly why. I remember talking to Jrue after the game, and you look at the final possession of the game. It is Wesley Matthews, Kawhi Leonard on the right wing, one-on-one. The Bucks don't have enough. They don't have enough time to help. It literally is just one-on-one, and they got there because the Clippers went out of their way to screen Jrue Holiday, who's a perennial Defensive Player of the Year candidate, one of the very best two-way players in the league. They set a screen to get Wesley Matthews onto Kawhi Leonard, and after the game, Jrue told me, I saw it coming, I knew they wanted the switch, and I said, go ahead, good luck. And that, to me, just spoke volumes to who those two guys are, how they try to get things done, and ultimately what they're going to need to do in the playoffs. Before that game, I asked Mike Boonholzer about how in the regular season you tend not to get playoff intensity. You tend not to get playoff reps. It's tough to find those things in the postseason. And if the Bucks are going to win another championship, their second in 3 years, they are going to have to go through the Boston Celtics. They're going to have to cover Jason Tatum. They're going to have to cover Jaylen Brown. And before the game, I asked Mike Boonholzer, I said, I know it's not those two guys, but I got to say, Kawhi Leonard and Paul George feel a lot like those two guys. It's tough to find those kind of comparisons, those analogies, those actual regular season reps that look like the playoffs. And he agreed, and he said, you know, this is going to be a great test for us, and I want to see what we can do against it. And you know, you mentioned the final minute 47. If you go even further back, I think the final 3:30 of that game, Kawhi Leonard goes 0 for 5. Paul George goes 0 for 3. Combined in the final 3.5 minutes, they're 0 for 8 in that game. And you look at who's covered them, and it's Wesley Matthews and Jrue Holiday. And I agree. I think this is going to be a fun moment to look back on during the season because, one, you know, Wesley Matthews is someone that Mike Boonholzer has gone out of his way to protect from a minutes perspective. He's getting a little bit older. And I do wonder if we're going to just start to see Wesley in the rotation all the time. And then I just think it's a great playoff preview because Wesley Matthews is clearly someone that they trust in the postseason, and they trust him for that reason on the defensive end.
Eric, you mentioned that often in the hotel lobbies, et cetera, that Wesley Matthews and Jrue Holiday get confused. I'm sure Wesley would love to be signing Drew's checks.
Yes, I would think so.
Rumors are swirling, as they always do, around the trade deadline. And in past years, the Bucks have made multiple moves. What are you hearing?
Yeah, I think anytime you cover a team that is run by John Horst, you are going to hear rumors. Because John has proven over the years that he will be incredibly aggressive when it comes down to the trade deadline. I think back to that first season that they had Mike Budenholzer. They have the best record in the league. Everyone's thinking, okay, well, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Best team in the league, what are you going to do? And you looked at the assets and you didn't think they really had a whole lot. And then all of a sudden he manages to put 4 second-round picks together and they get a great player in Nikola Mirotic. And it didn't end up working out. Mirotic got a little bit cold in the postseason. But to me, that really set the tone for exactly what we were going to see with John Horst in charge. He is going to go out of his way to, and again, it's not necessarily that these are moves that are going to totally change the landscape or totally change how people perceive the Milwaukee Bucks. But what they're going to do is, if the Bucks, and I don't really look at Vegas odds or anything, I have no idea what the percent chance is, but if the Bucks are, you know, if they have a 15% chance to win a championship this season, John Horst is doing everything in his power to make it 15.1, 15.5, 16, 18, 20, whatever it may be. He's always trying to just push it further and further into the Bucks' favor. So he's always going to go out there and do that. And I think when you look at this team, one of the rumors that just won't go away is Jay Crowder, who fans in Milwaukee and the state of Wisconsin know well from his days at Marquette, a guy that they saw in the 2021 NBA Finals when he played for the Phoenix Suns, a 6'7" wing, big, physical, buff, hard-nosed defender, which obviously sounds a lot like Wesley Matthews and Drew Holiday, who we were just talking about, and a guy that has proven to be able to knock big shots down in big moments. And the Bucks have been connected to him for a long time. I do think there's mutual interest between Jay Crowder and the Milwaukee Bucks. I think the tough part is whether or not the Phoenix Suns can find another deal. If the Phoenix Suns have been rumored in a number of large deals, those kind of groundbreaking, landscape-shaping deals that I was talking about earlier in this segment, they have been connected to those. I think the Suns want to try to make one of those. Trading Jay Crowder to the Bucks for a couple second-round picks is not that move. But if they get down to the deadline, something hasn't happened, I think you could very well see them in a position where they got to get something for Jay Crowder, and they'd rather get that something from the Bucks than nothing at all. So I think that's a rumor you hear. The Bucks have been connected to a guy, Bojan Bogdanovic, over for the Detroit Pistons, another 6'7", 6'8", and wing. And if you're thinking about the Milwaukee Bucks in this trade deadline, that's what you're thinking of. A guy probably between 6'5", and 6'8", can play on the wings, can maybe defend a couple positions, and probably knock down some shots, because that's going to be important if you play next to Giannis. Bojan Bogdanovic is that type of guy, averaging 20 points per game, shooting around 40% from the three-point line for the Pistons this year. The only problem is trying to figure out whether or not the Pistons are going to make a move, and if they want to try to sell off some parts, or if they want to keep him around and make sure that they're ready to go for next year, roughly their fifth year in a rebuild, and kind of do some of that. So those are some of the names that you hear, but when you're thinking about John Horst, you're thinking about him being aggressive, and when you think about this Bucks team and that path that they have to go to, we talked about it earlier, you've got to go through the Boston Celtics. How do you get more big wings that can defend those two guys and Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown? That always has to be the thought process, and the idea is you try to build this team up and get them ready for another championship run.
The clock is running. We'll sure find out soon on or before February 9. Eric, great insight. Thanks so much for the time with us today. Really enjoyed our visit, and you've been listening to Courtside with the Milwaukee Bucks on WTMJ. So long, everybody.
$5. Final few minutes here on Bucks Weekly. And again, our guest this week on Courtside was Eric Name of The Athletic. You can find the entire interview, this entire show, and every postgame show, Bucks Talk, on our Bucks flagship podcast feed. The next episode of Bucks Talk is Thursday night, and it's going to be a big one, potentially even larger than we anticipated. So the trade deadline is 2 p.m. Central Time on Thursday. You're starting to see a little bit more of the rumors here and more smoke around some names. Bucks being linked to a handful. The most recent one that came out is a very familiar name that it seems like pops up every year. Mark Stein reporting the Bucks have had some interest in Knicks backup point guard Derrick Rose. And it seems like that is an annual tradition as we get close to the trade deadline. The Bucks and rumored interest in Derrick Rose. But
could you imagine Jay Potts?
Oof.
He would love that.
Yeah, that would certainly be something. You've had Derrick Rose, Bojan Bogdanovic, Jay Crowder. I did see another report as well from, I believe, Sam Amick of The Athletic saying he heard from one league source, I expect a big name to be traded that no one is currently discussing. And when he was pressed of, well, who is that name? Well, if I told you, then somebody would be discussing it. But I heard from someone else with some connections as well that they anticipate a lot to happen between now and 2 p.m. on Thursday for the trade deadline. So, you know, of course, that means it's going to be a relatively dead trade deadline. But the overall story here, Thursday night, Bucks Talk, we'll recap what may or may not have happened that day and how it relates to the Bucks at the trade deadline, and we will potentially be breaking down history. LeBron James plays in a game that tips off in about an hour. He needs 36 points to become the NBA's all-time leading scorer, so it's either happening tonight or Thursday against the Bucks. I also mentioned the Bucks getting better in the second half. Since Chris Middleton returned, they are shooting 40% on their threes in the second half. That's a number you love to see. Talk to you Thursday night as we recap the trade deadline on Bucks Talk.